Bets off.
Keith Murphy.
This is your time.
And he fails.
Hey, where's the bar? Let's have some drinks here. See what's going on.
It's the Murphy and Andy Show.
Shoots a three and got it.
Powered by AD.
We wear caps and sleeves at this level, son.
On 1460.
KXNO.
And now 106.3 FM.
It is hour two of the Murphy and Andy Show on a Monday. Glad to have you with us. Beautiful day here in the capital city. I'm Keith Murphy. Andy's off today. AD powering us up. AD, Saturday, Jenny and I saw you over there at the 85 Bears Bar. Yeah. That was your first time there as a Bears fan. What'd you think?
Incredible. Awesome. Like, yeah, like so cool. It was, you know, it's, yeah, there just aren't enough Bears bars. The murals they have up, just, you know, you could, it's one of those you could just kind of walk around and look at all the different things all day. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. That's a cool spot.
Did you say there's not enough Bears bars? Like there needs to be more than one?
Yes.
No, come on.
Well, I guess now that we have the one, I feel pretty good about it.
They have Chicago dogs there too.
They do.
I don't think you had one of those because you were on the old style train.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Now is that because you're in a Bears bar? You think you have to? Because I don't think I normally see you having an old style.
No, I do that though. Yeah, I kind of see what seems to be.
You blend
norm.
In.
I try to blend in. Yeah, exactly. And I got there and it's like, oh, $3 old style. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm in a Chicago bar. It's a Chicago beer. Absolutely.
I'm starting to rethink my cosmopolitan. I thought some people were looking at me sideways. Let's get to the 2 p.m. trend.
Trending Iowa, powered by Axis, providing treatment to children and families living with autism, developmental disabilities, and behavioral
trending
needs.
Trending Iowa, John Rothstein is reporting Iowa will play Utah State in basketball this December 18th at the Sanford Pentagon in South Dakota. The Aggies of Utah State were an 11 seed in last season's NCAA tournament and an 8 seed in 2019. Utah State coach Ryan Odom is entering his first season after 5 years at UMBC, where you may remember his 16 seed Retrievers beat one seed Virginia in 2018.
Right. The Pentagon is the main story here, I think.
Yeah, it's not exactly Gonzaga.
Yeah, Utah State, you're right. They're good at basketball. That matchup just does nothing for almost no one.
No.
But
hey, fans will be able to travel up there this year.
Really, other than the outcome of the game for Hawkeye fans, well, no, let's just change the whole thought of that. Nothing worked out about that, really.
No, it really didn't. Trending Iowa, the Iowa Cubs return home complete with beer bats tomorrow night against Omaha. There's a doubleheader Wednesday afternoon, evening, fireworks on Friday, and a matinee on Sunday before the iCubs hit the road again next week.
We had the beer bats last night on Sound Off. Didn't drink them, but somebody drank them. It wasn't John and me. We were on the air. But you have to remember as you hold them, if you don't know this, you can't set them down anywhere.
It's not flat on the
bottom. It's not flat on the way. It is like a plastic baseball bat, but the bottom is not enough that you would feel stable putting it anywhere, and it's probably not going to fit in any kind of cup holder. So you have to down that.
Yeah, down the 32 ounces.
32 ounces of beer.
Finally, trending out, we've got high school baseball on the air tonight. Roosevelt hosts Lincoln. Game two of their doubleheader starts at 6, and you can hear that with Trent Condon on the call right here on KXNO.
Trent Condon, man, he's everywhere these days.
He is.
Gambling, commercials.
He's everywhere.
Miller and Condon, high school games. I pass him in the hallways. At any time I can't figure out a stat and I say it on the air, I immediately get a text with the information.
He's a show researcher.
I don't know how he finds time. I think he's a husband and dad. I don't know how Condon stays this busy.
That's it for Trending Iowa, powered by Axis.
It is the Murph and Andy Show. If you're just joining us, if you're not, it's still worth repeating. The Supreme Court routed the NCAA today. The final score was 9-0. That was a unanimous vote on amateurism violating antitrust laws. The Supreme Court wrote in its decision, nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay workers a fair market rate on the theory their product is defined by not paying a fair market rate. Under principles of antitrust law, it's not evident why college sports should be any different. Among the things being written here, Justice Kavanaugh writes, the NCAA is not above the law. It was a rough, rough day for the NCAA, and they paid millions of dollars for this humiliating defeat. And Nate Bolton of Hedberg and Bolton joins us now with his labor expertise, and we could use some help on this. So, Nate, thanks for jumping on with us on short notice.
Great to be with you, and wow, what a blistering decision for the NCAA today.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, among things, Justice Kavanaugh really brought the hammer here. He wrote many different things here, but nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. And under ordinary principles of antitrust laws, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. And then Justice Kavanaugh goes on to drop in lines about love of the law, spirit of amateurism, customers prefer. I mean, he just really hits back hard on all of these. And it is there's nothing left to debate here on how sound of a defeat this was. So, Nate, what does it mean when this ruling comes out? What does it mean? How quickly does it change these sports we love, if at all?
So the first thing is the actual issue and ruling itself, very small in change for your fans. They're not going to see a major difference in college athletics because of this decision and the ability for college athletes to essentially make academic income, things like post-graduation, paid internships. I mean, it's not a huge game changer from that perspective, but it is a huge signal that the NCAA pure amateurism argument is dead. It was probably dead about 15 years ago, but the courts have continued to just chip away at this concept that the NCAA model is so unique and special. It should be an exception to employment and labor law and all other facets of the law. And the court, the United States Supreme Court, has finally just thrown up its hands and said, enough. You guys cannot continue to come into forums and say that you are just so special. We have to ignore all these rights violations that are associated with your model.
Yeah, it's one of the examples Justice Kavanaugh uses. All of the restaurants in a region cannot come together to cut cooks' wages on the theory that customers prefer to eat food from low-paid cooks. Law firms cannot conspire to cabin lawyers' salaries in the name of providing legal services out of love of the law. News organizations cannot join forces to curtail pay to reporters to preserve a tradition of public-minded journalism. So basically what he did, and there was more, he took all of their talking point buzzwords about why this needs to be maintained and threw it right back at them from a legal position. So I would agree with you, and I'm no expert. It seems like the bigger game changer today is this could not be more clear that the NCAA needs to not come forward with anything else. Am I right in that the Supreme Court is signaling that you bring any of this to us and this is what you're going to get?
Correct. This is a major signal. I mean, it's the size of the majority obviously is a major signal, but the language is just so targeted at sending a message to the NCAA of we are not going to save you from yourselves anymore. The courts cannot be here to allow, you know, huge multi-million dollar marketing deals and licensing and sponsorship contracts, sports gambling, and all these things that exist around unpaid college athletes and say that as a matter of law, it's right not to allow them to have any form of compensation. So when you start looking at name, image, likeness, we start looking at the other issues that have been kind of being raised, the NCAA is going to have a very difficult time getting past citation of this decision for the arguments that they've been making.
Nate Bolton is with us of Hedberg and Bolton, and Nate Bolton, along with Brad Zahn, brought a bipartisan bill designed to make name, image, likeness legal, put it into effect here in the state of Iowa, That did not end up happening. It has happened in some other states. As you've explained well here, Nate, this doesn't change all of that, but it signals everything. So what do you think this does for name, image, likeness at this point?
Well, one of the major pushes against name, image, likeness legislation was this idea that, well, the Supreme Court may step in and say it violates the amateurism model and the NCAA model going forward. Well, that's pretty clearly not the case after today. So that argument seems to be gone. And so now it really is just about whether the NCAA will step up and find a solution to do this on a national level, or if it will have to be the states that individually deal with this issue to protect their own college athletes in their own jurisdiction. And as of right now, we have states that have laws in effect, and it continues to be a growing list. Pretty soon, it's going to be simply a competition issue. You're not going to be able to recruit high-quality major athletes in Division I sports where they're going to be making a very simple decision of, do I get to profit off my name, image, likeness in that state or not? So this is going to put a lot of pressure for action on those issues.
Do you think this ultimately ends up with players making salaries, or how, as you look at this long term, what do you think ultimately changes?
The funny thing is, all of the opposition that the NCAA has focused on each of these individual issues, you know, standing up in court and defending themselves in the EA Sports case, showing up and defending themselves on this case, with these arguments that they are special and they're exempt, has only pushed this closer and closer to direct compensation of athletes. I mean, that is the result that they are putting themselves in the position of eventually having happen, because they couldn't concede any ground up to this point on all these other issues. They probably could have modified and modernized their amateurism model to include name, image, likeness, to include academic compensation like that was in today's decision, and probably could have said that our model is evolving and can survive. What their decisions have been doing is really just putting their head in the sand and hoping that the courts would make this all go away. And really, it's ended up putting them in an awful position to say their model is no different from a professional sports system. And it's their own doing that's got us here. So hopefully they evolve very quickly and start working with legislatures to make this happen and make a kind of model act available out in the states, so we have fair competition and still preserve college athlete rights. But so far, their antics have resulted in the exact opposite of what they want to achieve.
In the upcoming calendar school year, Nate Bolton, do you expect like Brock Purdy or Caitlin Clark to be able to profit on his or her name, image, likeness?
I think in the state of Iowa, that is still unlikely, but the pressure has grown. Today's decision was a huge development, and we're going to keep working on it. And I'm going to be doing my part to have conversations with other legislators to try to make that happen.
Do you see this as hurting, helping, or indifferent toward non-revenue sports or women's sports in general? Do you see any of this ruling today as troublesome for the non-profit making sports?
I don't see anything uniquely about today or the overall conversation of how do we kind of enhance student athlete, college athlete rights in terms of marketability and profitability of their name, image, likeness, or academic income. But the bigger issue we have is the NCAA model continues to be so money-driven and money-based that, decades ago we got away from this idea that these are just kind of no different than the geology club on campus. This is a group of students who want to get together and play a sport, and that is what really has changed the model for those kind of less prominent, less revenue generating sports. And the NCAA and individual institutions can always point their finger and blame things like today's decision for what decisions they're making regarding those other sports. But the reality is they left them quite a long time ago. And if they really want to focus on the mission that they profess in court very, very, very frequently about is being truly student athlete driven and an educational mission, we wouldn't even be debating whether or not some of these smaller, more specific interest sports would be surviving. They absolutely would as part of that mission.
Does name, image, likeness, when you're paid for that, will there be tax consequences for the student athletes for that?
It all depends on how it's done. If it is just direct compensation and would be just like any other third-party contractual agreement that you would have or summer job that you would have. If a college basketball player wants to do a summer camp and earns income off that summer camp, whether they're a professional, whether they're a college athlete, that would be income for that purpose. At one point, we had trust accounts in the legislation that was drafted here in Iowa a couple of years ago, just because nobody else has done that, that kind of faded in importance for our legislation here. But that would have put a wrinkle on when taxation would have applied to it. But as a general rule, it's going to be income, so it probably is going to be taxed.
Nate Bolden, you've made it more understandable, and we always appreciate you being willing to come on short notice. So thank you, Nate, and this is a good day for you, too. You've been pushing this name, image, likeness, and now the Supreme Court has said this. You better get on board with this stuff or trouble ahead. So happy for you and what you've been trying to do.
Well, thanks for that, and I'm just very happy for the college athletes that we've been trying to help get the rights that they should have always had compared to others that are on campus and outside of campus, to their own name, image, likeness, to their own ability to make that transition from college to career. And today was a big decision on that transition from college to career standpoint for sure.
Yeah, we all worry, and I'm guilty of this, if that's the right word, Nate. I love college sports, and I don't want to see them change. So intellectually, I know this is the right thing and what should be done, but just from my fandom standpoint, I worry, is this going to change this thing that I love so much? And I think that's the worry with people. I think they can see the logic of this and at the same time worry that it's going to be something ultimately negative. And maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be positive. I just don't know.
I think you look at the Olympic model, the evolution of the Olympics, I think has been generally positive from what used to be defined as a very pure amateurism model to an evolving model. And I think NCAA sports can get there too.
Good point. Nate, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
It's Nate Bolden of Hedberg and Bolton, and now Ed Wilson of Wilson and Wilson. Ed!
Ed Wilson and Mr. Ed and Wilson.
Hey,
how are you guys?
How are you doing, Ed?
Well, it's just you today, right? Andy's not on with you.
Yeah. Right. No, anytime I ask Andy about having you on, he's like, I don't want Ed on. So since he's not here, I thought I'd jump at the opportunity.
I love it.
Ed, we talked some in hour one. Won't go over the same ground again about, all of it anyway. I know that to some degree there, the weather department has been under siege of most people. I think have been polite and understanding. There have been a few people that have been mean-spirited, but most people just wanted to see the U.S. Open. So I thought I'd have you on just to kind of explain. I tried to, but you could probably do a better job of what exactly the policy is for a tornado warning when a tornado has actually been spotted on the ground.
Yeah, and there is a difference, because when we put out tornado warnings, and they all come from the National Weather Service, we can judge from our radar to see if something is rotating, if there's a tornado quote-unquote signature on it, but we wait for the warning from the National Weather Service. So sometimes it's called a radar-indicated warning, which often happens at night where you cannot see what's going on. But when we have a confirmed tornado warning, that means that there's a spotter there that's actually seen the tornado on the ground, and that's what was going on last night. And in this particular case, it was very close to Pella, which, with the Vermeer tornado that they had a few years ago, that's where, it was such an amazing miracle, really, that big plant over there at Vermeer. You know, they had 4,000 people on that plant, and nobody was injured, but it was complete destruction of a lot of their buildings. So that's what was going on last night. It was just to use the coined phrase, a perfect storm, where we had the U.S. Open, the United States Open, on the air, and at a time where it's a crucial putt that's going in, and we cut right there. Part of that is just the mechanics of how our company runs our control room. We can't just go punch on the air whenever we want to. We give it to another control. It's actually in Spartanburg, South Carolina. So
yeah,
it's another
state. Yeah, there's a lag on the punch by the time the decision is made. They're not watching the putt to see whether it rolls in. And I get that no one would understand that watching at home.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to make excuses. We're always going to go on the air when there's a tornado warning. It's our number one goal to make sure that everybody is safe, no matter what's on the air. I 15 years ago, I interrupted the entire last game of the Stanley Cup playoffs with a tornado that sat on the ground on Highway 34 in Southern Iowa, all the way across the state. And as frustrating as that was for everybody, nobody felt worse about it than I, but I wanted to make sure that we were on the air. And the next morning I had a guy, in his hockey gear waiting for me at 8 o'clock in the morning, at our front desk. Thankfully, I don't come to work till 2, so I missed him, but it upsets people. And, you know, nobody's more understanding because I love golf. We were kind of on a smaller than usual schedule for our production crew, and we had Father's Day, so Megan and Amber were here to let us be with our kids. I appreciate that so much, and it was a perfect storm situation.
It was. And Ed, making sure again, I said some things in hour one, which people, if want to listen to podcasts, can, but I want to make sure this is accurate. The weather coverage as a tornado is on the ground and a threat to a local community. We are full screen at that time, but later I was standing in the control room with our general manager Bobby Tosh, and he was on the phone with you, and at one point, even though we were still in a tornado warning, you made the determination that enough of the threat had dissipated that you felt like we could go to a split screen at that time, and did that all accurate?
That is, and I was actually, with my family celebrating Father's Day. I couldn't get into the station, but it was that situation where I could see, as Amber and Megan were giving the weather coverage, that it's the signature of that storm really started to fall apart. Now, when it began, the wording, and this was, from the National Weather Service, a confirmed large and extremely dangerous tornado was spotted near Pella, moving east at 30. And again, that, you know, you're in a life-threatening situation. The tornado is confirmed. It's on the ground, and it was moving right toward Pella at 30 miles an hour. So, you have to be on the air for that. And it's kind of not shoot from the hip, but it's a trigger where you know you have to be on there right away. We've just had so many tornadoes. For instance, the Marshalltown tornado, where we were able to be on the air 15 minutes before that one hit. Before it was even confirmed. But again, it wasn't during a U.S. Open, and there are some qualifiers that just take some experience. You want to make sure that everybody sees their favorite programming, but you also know that there's that time where you've got to be on to make sure that nobody is, if they can hear us. There's so many ways to hear the warnings, but to be on, and even with FCC regulations, we have to be a servant to the public for severe weather.
And I know many people suggested, and we understand why, and eventually did this when Ed determined the storm was not the threat it originally was, go to 13.2, but that is a small fraction of the people that watch 13. There are a lot of people that just don't even understand how to get to 13.2, so that's not always the answer. And Ed, I do know,
if you don't have the right service, right, you have to have an antenna. You have to have rabbit ears on. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the proper service, you can always watch it. You can live stream it as well on our apps, but that doesn't cover 100% of the people either.
And I'd say, and I do know just from a conversation with you early this morning, we know this wasn't perfect. And one of the things that I do appreciate is hearing you and our boss and the big boss, all that. They've already said, you know, let's get together and talk about all this and make sure we're approaching this in the best possible way. We have the Olympics coming up. You take something like this and you do the best you can, and people are working hard, and then you try to determine, is there a better way we can do this? Is there something we're not seeing here? Did somebody make a suggestion that maybe moving forward we could do that from now on? And unless you're somebody not open to growth, that's what we should do.
Right. And you're exactly right. It's the experience. It's doing this for 30 plus years here, but also to pass that along to less experienced folks. And not that Amber Alexander or Megan Selwa, they're excellent meteorologists, but this was probably one of the first times that somebody who was rather new to this market or new to the business, which, you know, they both have some great years of experience. But this may have been the time where I think they took what people were upset about and took it very personally. And I don't think that was really in 90% of the response. I don't think that's what people meant to do. You know, you have to have thick skin and kind of just let, you know, you know what the right thing to do. And it's when there's a tornado on the ground, you want to protect life. And after that, you know, when it's done, get off the air as soon as possible. But it's what it is. It's going to happen again. It certainly, you know, we're in the latitude here where that's where we have tornadoes. We live here, but we want to make sure everybody's safe. So you're right. It not just for us as a station, but, you know, we have 160 some stations that are in our group, in our company. I think if we can learn from this and find a better way to get things on the air, that's really important down the air, there down the line as well.
Well said, Ed, and we appreciate you coming on with us. And, gosh, for goodness sakes, take a vacation or something, would you?
You know what? I think I might. I'm going to take a Thursday and Friday off this week.
good plan.
The boss already approved it, so I'm on.
good idea. You might wish you were off today. All right, thank you, Ed.
Oh, it's all right. It's all good.
Ed Wilson there, WHO 13 chief meteorologist. And when we come back, you're taking over the Moore today, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah, you did a great job last time. We'll see if you can...
Deep experience.
Fairway online shopping. That's right. Add her coming soon to your local Fairway. You can now shop online for curbside pickup at your local Fairway. Visit shop.fairway.com to send us your order today. We can't
wait. Computer career. If you really want more.
More, Murph.
Let's do a little more. Brought to us by Bet Rivers.
That's right.
I have the app, and I also had the Jazz. Boy, was I feeling good up 15.
Yeah, you were. I had a nice little bet on Friday. They had a special. If you go to their specials on the Bet Rivers app, it'll just kind of play some things for you. And one of them was, will either game feature a team down by 15 that comes back to win? And I thought, oh, that's a fun little bet. It had really good odds. I put $5 on it. That was great. I felt good.
Worked against me.
I don't know what I'm going to do tonight. No NBA tonight.
Oh, yeah. First NHL only tonight?
Yeah. I don't bet the NHL. I stay out of those waters. I've learned my lesson from betting things I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Murph, the new Iowa poll came out over the weekend with the Des Moines Register. 66% of Iowa adults say they are confident the COVID-19 pandemic will continue to decline. Just 28% say they're worried about new surges of cases or deaths, and 6% aren't sure. So I think this is a good kind of snapshot of the mindset of most Iowans right now. That's how I feel. It feels like we are kind of on the other side of this. Now, I know in other places in the world, that's not the case, and there's always the chance of something coming back, but I'm at least living my life as though we've kind of moved on from this, which is just great.
It really is, and I sense that most people are to the point now where, like, we were at the Barnstormers game Saturday night for Jenny's birthday. We had a great time. Sat on the boards. I had a shot at a pass, and I kind of blew it. It hit the chair first and then bounced off Jenny's arm.
Yeah, that's rough.
I know. I should have leaned into it, but then I thought, it just went through my head, what if I don't catch it? So I let it hit the chair. So that didn't work out. We had a great time there, but the Barnstormer cheerleaders, I'm sure under the instructions of somebody, they're still cheering en masse. And at this point, that's kind of jarring. It's like noticeable. It's gone the other way now.
It has.
You know, where you see, like, they're wearing masks? Why are they wearing? And then when you see, like, all eight of them in masks, you're like, oh, that's
okay. Yeah,
there's some policy that says they have to be wearing masks.
Well, we'll stick with the Iowa poll here, because in contrast with much of social media, at least much of what I see on social media, 64% of those polled say when they see someone wearing a mask indoors in public, they feel that person is acting responsibly. Another 19% think the mask wearer is somewhat overacting, but just 7% think it's a problem. 7% think the way they're acting by wearing that mask is problematic. And I like polls like this because it shows that most of us are cool with other people doing their own thing. It's a small minority who get mad about things like people making their own choices. But as Andy highlighted, I thought very well on What's Bugging Andy on Sound Off last night, social media can give those small voices a megaphone and can really make us feel like everyone is always angry about everything.
Right.
And you get out in public and you get out with other people and you talk to people as a person, and you realize, oh, most people aren't living their lives upset about a mask mandate or a lack of a mask mandate. Most people don't care when they see you wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. They just kind of, oh, that's what they're doing. I'll do what I do, and we all move on with our lives.
Yeah, you do you. Reminder, and you and I talked about this Saturday afternoon, just 8% of people are on Twitter. I mean, when you, it feels like it's 90%.
It does.
It's not. And then the other factor there is 80% of the content is created by 10% of the people on Twitter, and most of that is political.
It's crazy.
People trying to further their narratives. So, yeah, you do get lost in that sometimes, and we have to remember that. And you want to wear a mask now? Fine. That's fine with me. That does not bother me. I don't see them as problematic. I was wondering, like, at this point, if you see, we should do this as a quickie poll tomorrow. If you see somebody in a mask, technically, you should probably assume that they're not vaccinated, because many places say, if you're not vaccinated, please wear a mask.
Yes.
But I think when I see somebody wearing a mask, I think they're being really cautious. I don't think, oh, they're not vaccinated, because I know some people who have chosen to not get vaccinated, and they're not wearing masks. I see them as right. People who, they weren't wearing masks when the pandemic was at its peak. So when you see someone with a mask, do you think, oh, not vaccinated, or do you think, oh, cautious?
I think cautious. Yeah,
me too.
I almost never think not vaccinated, but that would be an interesting quickie poll.
Yeah.
I think they must have something in their lives, a person or, you know, whatever it is. There's a reason that they're doing that, but I don't ever think, well, they're following the rules.
Right. That's ironic.
Murph, on this day in 1971, Ken Harrelson retires from baseball to pursue a career in professional golf. Now, he didn't make it in professional golf, but he did have quite a career in another field. Maybe.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back, looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes.
Of course, Ken Hawk Harrelson, the longtime voice of the Chicago White Sox. I didn't even realize he was a player.
I knew he was a player. I am surprised he retired in 1971. That's a long time ago.
And when I saw this, it was like to pursue a career in professional golf. So I was thinking, oh, there must have been another Ken Harrelson who went on to be a professional golfer. Now he went on to be a broadcaster. Now, I did find this interesting. Harrelson has been credited with being the first player to wear a batting glove in an actual game. Now, Peter Morris's book, A Game of Inches, says that the batting glove may have been used as early as 1901 and was definitely used by Lefty O'Doul and Johnny Frederick of the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1932, and was also definitely used by Bobby Thompson of my Giants in the 50s. But Harrelson can be credited with reintroducing and popularizing the batting glove in the 1960s. So no Hawk Harrelson, no batting gloves.
Jeez. I recall, and many of you will too, just wanting to wear those batting gloves so badly in Little League, because it just made you feel like you're a little bit next level baseball. Like, I got batting gloves like some of the pros do.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're supposed to have it on your left hand, and then it would go in your glove, take a little bit of the burn off a hard throw. But some of us at some point didn't just wear the batting glove on the left hand. You'd have that You'd keep one in the dugout or your back pocket so you could go to two batting gloves.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you needed two batting gloves for Little League. You're probably holding an aluminum bat. You know, they already had grips on it and everything.
My four-year-old son had batting gloves his first year at T-ball 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, you got to have, yeah, you got to look like
the
pros.
You got to look the part. On this day in 1986, Heisman Trophy winner Bo Jackson signs a three-year contract to play baseball with the Kansas City Royals. Now, I didn't know much of this story. I run back and read some of it. So Bo had been drafted by the Tampa Bay Bucks, but he followed through on a promise to not sign with them. I guess when he had visited them, he was still playing baseball at Auburn. They told him their facility was okay through the NCAA. It turns out that wasn't the case, so he had to quit playing baseball. He thinks they did that to make him stop playing baseball, so he gets upset. He says, I'm not going to sign. Don't draft me. I'm not going to sign. Well, they draft him. He doesn't sign. So he does sign with the Royals. He played in the minors much of the 86 season. He did make his big league debut that year in September. And then the Bucks forfeited his rights before the 87 draft, where he was taken by the Raiders with the 183rd pick. He was hesitant. He didn't want to play football, but Al Davis promised he could continue to finish the baseball season, even if that meant missing the start of the NFL season. And that was enough to get Jackson to sign with Al Davis and the Raiders and become a two-sport athlete.
And for that brief time, he was spectacular.
I had that ball player poster on my wall where he's got the shoulder pads and he's holding the bat. Just so cool.
Climbing up walls after making catches, breaking bats over his knee, hitting 450-feet home runs, running over Brian Bosworth on touchdowns with sprinter speed.
We would go to Royals games as a kid, and I would hope he would strike out just to see him break a bat.
Yeah, and you knew that couldn't last long term. I mean, that's so much wear and tear on the body, especially the way he played football. He wasn't looking to avoid anybody. No, he would run somebody over. And I think it ultimately ends up being a hip injury that does him in.
Yes, that's right. All right. I digress. I guess I should have said I digress before I hit the... I'm not used to this.
See, you get to call the shot on when you do
that.
You're
right. Murph, let's do a quick update of Shohei Ohtani's week.
Okay.
Last Tuesday, he hits a home run. Wednesday, he hits a home run. Thursday, he's the starting pitcher. He goes six innings, gives up one earned run, has five strikeouts, and gets the win.
Jeez.
Friday, he hits two home runs. Saturday, he hits a home run. Yesterday, he hits a home run. He is tied with Vlad Jr. with 23 home runs for the league lead. Again, Tuesday and Wednesday home runs, wins a game as a starting pitcher Thursday, and then four home runs over the weekend.
It is the most underrated thing going on in the sports world right now. And I'm not saying it's getting no attention. You just gave it attention. But if this guy was doing this for the Yankees or the Cubs, he's kind of hidden over there on West Coast time. But this is incredible. I mean, he's Babe Ruth.
He is, exactly. It's amazing.
I mean, he hadn't had the career of Babe Ruth, but he's having like a couple of Babe Ruth-type seasons back when Ruth pitched and hit.
I hope he can continue to do this because it's fun to watch. Undigress in 2002. On this day, Lennox Lewis retains boxing's WBC World Heavyweight Crown with an eighth-round knockout over Mike Tyson. Here's Tyson before that fight.
I'm from Brownsville, Brooklyn. I'm not afraid of nobody. In the ring or out of the ring, they got a gun or a knife, and I'll show him that too.
Mike, you're jumping around. You seem to be a little anxious.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
He did not crush his skull. He got knocked out in the eighth round. This is one of the Tyson fights I watched. I didn't see him in his prime, but I still think that Lennox Lewis is massively underrated as a championship boxer.
Well, this proves it, because after hearing Tyson say that, I would have wet my boxer shorts and left.
Yes.
And Lewis didn't.
Nope.
He went in there and beat him.
He certainly did. On this day, we'll wrap it up with this. On this day in 2015, it's the U.S. Open. 21-year-old Jordan Spieth had just won the Masters earlier that year, and he is in the clubhouse with a one-stroke lead over Dustin Johnson.
And now a putt for eagle for Dustin Johnson to win the United States Open. Now Johnson's got to make this to force the playoff. If he does, it's 18 holes tomorrow. Jordan Spieth! Wow. Has won the U.S. Open.
That is Joe Buck on Fox from the call, 2015. Dustin Johnson had a rough few majors there before he finally broke through and won one.
Little snapshot into my 18 hours. I thought as he putted that you were going to go to audio of a Channel 13 weather cut in.
No, but I should have. That would have been funny. Spieth becomes the youngest winner since 1923 of the U.S. Open. He would then get fourth in the British Open and second in the PGA that season as a 21-year-old. And, of course, he was on his way to breaking every career record ever.
Yeah, we started to say, is this the new Tiger?
And then it was the 2016 Masters where he melted down. He has won a major since then. He won the British in 2017, I believe.
Shows you how hard it is.
He has not withheld or you know, stayed at that level that he was that initial year.
The 80 Squared is mic'd up, and you're listening to the Murph and Andy Show, brought to you in part by the Score Life. We're back on a Monday. It's the Murph and Andy Show. Thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it, and we have the AD Squared is just a token of our appreciation.
That's right. It's powered by Fiscus Jewelers in Ankeny. Check out Noel and his team up in Ankeny, locally owned, handmade jewelry. It's great stuff. I was in Savannah just a few weeks ago, Murph. I didn't catch a Savannah Bananas game.
Savannah Bananas are the team I told you and Andy about 6 weeks ago.
Yes.
They have decided to do all these things to just make baseball fast-moving and fun.
Banana ball.
Banana ball.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's cool. If you haven't seen YouTube video on banana ball, it's cool. But Ty Jackson is an outfielder. He was mic'd up for this game. I think you retweeted this last week. I saw it. And this is just a really fun little sequence because he's mic'd up. He had just struck out. So he's out in the outfield. He's kind of down. And then you couldn't write drama like this.
And my girlfriend's mom's here, and I just struck out. Usually not the best go-to for her.
Oh, I gotta catch that. I gotta catch that. I gotta catch that. I just caught that. Y'all heard that? Hey, say what's up.
My guy. Let's go, baby.
I think it's the mic. I think we're mic'd up.
So he's lamenting the fact that his girlfriend's mom is there, and he just struck out. And then it's a great catch. I mean, I didn't see like the wide version, but he's running at full speed, dives, makes the catch. I gotta catch that. I gotta catch that. I gotta catch that.
The Savannah Bananas also did something that I've never seen it before, but I was like, this is ingenious, and somebody around here locally is going to copy it, and I would too if I could. A guy for his walk-up music had the band go with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's like a 12-piece band playing his song.
That is great.
As he walks up to the batter's box, and then they just turn and go back into the stands.
That's amazing.
The Savannah Bananas, they're fun. Quickie Poll is presented by WCI Pools and Spas. It was, are you in favor of NCAA athletes being paid beyond their scholarship and beyond name, image, likeness as employees of the university? More than 700 votes in, and it is a dead heat. 50% yes, 50% no.
Wow.
But the 50% yes, do you know how much that is? If you had done this poll 2 years ago, it would be 80-20 or 90-10.
And I think a lot of people are like, I think where you are and certainly where I am, where I don't love the idea of it, and I'm not sure of all the implications, but I think it's probably time to move in that direction.
Royal Mile Inbox, Rock M writes, a college football playoff game involving Iowa or ISU, depending on the game, could still come in behind 1985 number one Iowa, number two Michigan game, at least for me.
Big game.